This is Trainer Talk on HRRN Live.
But it was all for Chuck McGee.
Super Saver wins the Derby for Top Pletcher.
The Salt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And dialed in, never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Presented by Basic Tipton. Now, here's Mike Penna.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the show Trainers Listen to, Trainer Talk, presented by Basic Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, my producer Lee Delapina. We are with you, as always, in our Lexington, Kentucky studios. And for those of you joining us throughout North America on Sirius Channel 93, welcome to the show. And a welcome back to everybody who has been with us for the past few hours on XM 208. Of course, you can always tune into the Horse Racing Radio Network every time we're on the air with our live streaming at horseracingradio.net. And you know, it seems like every week I begin the show by telling you that being a horse trainer is certainly no easy profession. It's a profession that takes an awful lot of commitment and dedication. It's 365 days a year, and there are no holidays when you're training horses, and nobody knows that better than our guest here this evening. It is John Terranova, the native of Syosset, New York, still living in Syosset. He's 43 years old and 360 wins to his credit, accounting for more than $19 million in purses, and nice enough to spend a little time with us here on Trainer Talk tonight. John, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
Yeah, happy to have you on board with me here, and really looking forward to hearing your story. You know, I mentioned that, you know, being a profession that is a profession that offers no holidays, it's 365 days a year. How do you cope with that?
Well, you know, obviously it's a big commitment, and you know, you knew that going in, growing up around the horses and seeing what it takes day in and day out. And you know, luckily my wife and I, we actually trained together, my wife Tanya, and she came up racing out and working at the stables out in California. And you know, we're lucky we've got a good team here, and you know, we're really committed, so it works.
And I'm going to assume that you met her on the racetrack?
I did. Yeah, it was going back to, let's see, it was summer of 91. She was traveling. She worked for Brian Mayberry for a few, you know, many years early on. And she was traveling with some of the stake horses and would come to Saratoga. So it happened to be a month after Saratoga, she had come back down to Belmont. And we were introduced back then, and that was it. The rest is history. So,
you know, there's that old saying that says never work with family. How does that dynamic work with you and your wife working together around the barn?
I think it's great. I think probably, you know, I'll say it would be, I couldn't imagine it being any other way. Let's say that. She's an unbelievable horsewoman. She's brought a lot to the stable and helped throughout the years tremendously, and you know, irreplaceable as far as that goes. But you know, we've certainly had our ups and downs over the years, like everybody, and you know, especially in this game, it's pretty stressful and tough. And you know, we're also raising a family. We've got two young girls, and you know, we're going on 44 now. We've been together, boy, since we started dating at 21, so it's been quite a while.
Wow. You mentioned the highs and the lows and the ups and the downs. It has to be somewhat rewarding and I guess maybe special to be able to go through that with somebody like your wife that's there, you know, hand in hand with you through the whole thing. And it's, you know, kind of a great team, isn't it?
I think so. You know, especially, you know, in this sport, you know, she understands, you know, what we're all going through, and she's going through the same thing. So, you know, she's able to, you know, we're able to do it together and take the ride together. So it's certainly a big part of it. You know, it's very very helpful that's the case, you know. But like I said before, I couldn't imagine it any other way.
Do your daughters have any interest in being trainers?
You know, I'm not so much sure about training and racing, but they are very interested in horses. They're both ride and show, and my older daughter, Paulina, is actually, you know, she's into the whole horse show world and equestrian now, and she's doing that whole scene. That's something new that I'd never, you know, been introduced to or known much about. And the last few years, Tanya's gotten into it with her more and more, and she's pretty dedicated and you know, actually pretty good. So I'm you know, we're encouraging, and they're actually Tanya just left to go get her and head out to go see her horse, because we've been away last past week on vacation, and she misses them, so she can't wait to get out there.
Yeah, how much different is that sport than what you're involved with training racehorses?
Well, you know, obviously the care goes into those horses, a lot of tremendous care and everything. So, you know, I can see that as far as, you know, gold and everything like that. It's a lot of things are different, but I can see the dedication too, you know, is there. I mean, those I'll call them kids, because, you know, that's all I'm seeing lately, but they're out there all the time, and, you know, they want, you know, working on their horses and training them just like we are, just to, for competition and everything like that. And, you know, actually, it's more yourself too as a rider. They're conditioning too as well along with it. But you know, the dedication certainly seems to be there as well.
John Terranova, my special guest on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So, John, for you, where did your love of horses begin? How did everything get started?
Well, I was probably about 9 or 10 years old, and my father had become interested in the sport, and he actually started owning some horses in New York. And I would take trips out to Belmont on the weekends with him, and we started as a family going to Saratoga every summer. And, you know, at that time it was the August place to be, was you know, what everybody was saying. So
yeah,
it was only 4 weeks. So,
yeah.
You know, that was the slogan. Yeah, the slogan for it. And we'd spend the whole month at Saratoga up there, and, you know, I'd get hot walking and doing all that as a kid around the barn and helping out and raking up and doing this, and kind of graduated into grooming horses and rubbing a few. And that was it. I went on, you know, to college. I mean, I loved being around the racetrack. I mean, it really, really took to it and stuck with me, and went on to college for a while. And, you know, after that, and came right back to the racetrack. I was kind of at a crossroad, I didn't know which way I was going to go, and I knew this was one thing I loved, and I wasn't really so sure I was into anything else, you know, as far as like the business world or anything like that goes. But you know, this was one thing I knew that I was very interested in, and I went back to the track, and the rest was history again, you know, just kept stuck with it. That was it, never left.
Yeah, you were a Boston College Eagle, right?
Yes. Yes.
Would you find yourself?
Yes, I have a lot of great friends, and actually one of my owners, a great owner of ours, Kerr Stable, the Devlin family, that two sons have gone to BC, so we have that connection there too, and it was a great experience, and, you know, it's led to some other good things, even though, you know, I didn't stick with it and go on, you know, and went back to the track. But
are you a Boston College fan now?
Oh, of course. Of course. Always got to root for the Eagles, yeah. So,
but would you find yourself,
they do well.
Would you find yourself sneaking out and running over to Suffolk? Or I think Rockingham was probably running at that time too, right?
Rockingham, Suffolk, and yeah, actually, believe it or not, I didn't get to the racetrack during college, but we did go to the dog track at Wonderland one time up there. I remember that, but that was just a day thing. But, you know, college, those years, it was a tough school, and, you know, a lot of studying, and, you know, a lot of good times as well. College was a fun time, so we were kind of distracted with other things in those years. So the horses came back to me, you know, as soon as I kind of just was trying to figure out which road to go down at the end.
Yeah, that couldn't have been an easy decision for you to leave school and then start training horses. How did that decision come about, and how did your parents take it?
You know, my father, he had been into the game and saw how much I loved it, and he was real supportive. My mother was, you know, she's more of a worrier, so she was, you know, worried, just wanted me to finish up and and you know, stay on track, and you know, we'll see later on. But you know, I felt it was at the time it was the right thing to do for me. I had to see. I wasn't in a rush to go anywhere, to do anything. You know, at that time we were obviously young, and you know, not a lot of responsibility just yet. And you know, I just wanted to feel it out and see. So it was almost like you know, a semester abroad to see what I was going to do, if I was going to go back to school or stick with it. And I didn't have very long to go in school. I went pretty far, but you know, no regrets now. So it's worked out pretty well. I got a great family, met a great girl, and you know, I couldn't be happier in that department. So
yeah. And you were an assistant trainer when you left school. Who was the person that gave you your first big break?
Well, when as far as who I worked for,
yeah.
Well, my dad had a few different trainers. One of his main ones was Dominic Imperio at the time. So I had worked for Dominic for quite a while. Alan Jerkins had trained some horses for my dad as well. You know, so I watched a lot, and really once I left school, I stayed with Dominic for a while, and then I left and I went out on my own. I went out to California, and this was shortly after I met Tanya. I didn't really know anybody out there, but Brian Mayberry really kind of took me in under his wing when I went out there. And, you know, he was, he kind of looked after me and showed me a lot, brought me everywhere, brought me to the sales with him, Brian and Jeannie. And, you know, we did all that. And I had just met, Bob Baffert at the time, in the 91 Breeders' Cup. He had that Soviet Sojourn, and I'd met all that whole California crew with Tanya that year. I just started dating her. So, you know, after beginning in 92 is when I moved out to California and really took out my trainer's license, started out then. So that was the beginning of it all. So I'd have to say, you know, big influences for Dominic, and then Brian Mayberry, big influence on us.
And it didn't,
especially my wife too, because she worked under him, you know, for so many years.
Yeah. And it didn't take you very long to pick up your first win. You mentioned taking out your trainer's license around 93, and it was in April of 93 at Keeneland of all places that you ended up getting your first winner, right?
It was, yeah, a horse called I'm No Quacker, neat horse, and you know, we had him I think we raced him until he was 7 or 8, and that was a great day. I can remember the whole day, and it was a lot of fun. And obviously, Keeneland over the years has been good to us, and you know, we've had a special place for it, you know, because going back to winning our first race, and that was a big moment for me, and you know, it'll always stick with me. But that was some time back then.
What were those initial months and years like when you were just getting started with your career?
Actually, you know, it was tough. It was, you know, we didn't have, you know, like I said, the big responsibilities of a house and a family and all that back then. It was Tanya and I, and we had a handful of horses, you know, for a few years, not many, you know, we were just kind of grinding it out and picking our spots and trying to win races and, you know, meeting people. And then, we came a few years later, it came to, I think it was 97, if I'm remembering right. It was Team Valor, Barry Irwin had called me up and was looking for somebody to take a horse named Star of Valor. And that was kind of a big break then because, you know, we knew Team Valor, they were getting, you know, they had high-level horses, and that was a big phone call. So I was really happy to get him, and we had a lot of fun with that horse. He won our first stake. Our first graded stake was the Aqueduct Handicap, and you know, we ended up getting several other horses from Barry and Team Valor back then. For it lasted a couple of years, and we had a good little run there. We had some fun, and really kind of moved us up a little bit. And then the Gatsis family had called. They were looking to move some horses from New Hampshire, from Rockingham and Suffolk down to New York. And they had come down, Mike Gatsis and his son Matt, and were looking for a trainer down in New York to base out of. So they came and met with Tanya and I, and, you know, I thought it went really well and everything. So they got back to New Hampshire that night, called me up and said, can you take about 13 horses right away? And I said, sure. I didn't have the stalls or anything. I think we had 7 or 8 at the time. And I said, just send them. I went in, I saw Mike Lake now. I said, Mike, I got a got to get some stalls. I got this new guy coming in, and I got this horse. I know you know this New York breed called Gander, and I had known of them. And I think, you know, they're going to be great people to have. And, you know, down here, I want to fit them in. And it was the rest is history. We've been together going on 14 years now with the Gastus family, who has evolved into Sovereign Stable present day. So that's been a great relationship and a great boost to our career, and they're really been the backbone of our Tanya and I training career, you know, past decade or more.
Yeah, it sounds to me like you've really been able to keep everything in perspective, and I mean that from the aspect that you started with so few horses, and you mentioned just kind of grinding it out, you and your wife trying to get things rolling, and then Barry Irwin comes along, and you get some success there, and all of a sudden, people are sending you multiple horses. That has to help you keep everything in perspective now, doesn't it?
We do, yeah. You know, at the time, like early on, I didn't really work for a big trainer and have a name and then graduate with a barn full of horses. It really took many years to get the momentum rolling. I didn't have, you know, a lot of contacts and things like that. And going back to maybe that's, you know, part with my personality. And I mean, I'm not a very aggressive salesman and everything like that. I don't go calling people up and asking to train their horses. I just, you know, I hope things will work out. We'll win races and people appreciate the work we do and see us and say, hey, you know, maybe we'll, you know, give them a call and we'll get together. And it's happened over the years. And, you know, we've met some great people and, you know, we've had some owners that have stuck with us for many, many years. And, you know, we love them and we've had a great, great relationships we've built. Not only, you know, racing horses, but we're friends, you know, outside of, and we, you know, we have some good relationships in that area as well. So it's been a lot of fun, and you know, I wouldn't change a thing. You know, we'd all love to have a endless stream of horses and everything, but you know, some years it's stronger than others, and you know, other meets, but you know, we'll keep doing what we're doing and working hard and hope the good ones come our way. And you know, some of our big owners that we've had for so long, I just hope to keep their stable strong year in and year out. You know, that's a big goal of ours, you know, keep them doing really well and enjoying it. And, you know, it makes us even happier when they're having a good time and a lot of success.
Talking with John Terranova on Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. John, then you get to the point in, I guess it was 2008, where along comes a little mare by the name of Lara, and she really took you to another level, taking you to the Breeders' Cup and the Juvenile Fillies Turf. She was third in the 2008 renewal. Tell me about her and tell me about what that meant to your career.
Well, that was fantastic. She ended up being our first Grade One winner, and with that, winning the Hollywood Starlet, she took us to the Breeders' Cup. She was something. That was, I believe, Tappet's first crop, and you know, lo and behold, you know, he looked like he was starting to get runners, and big, beautiful filly came in, and she, you know, she looked talented right off the get-go, and we were going to run her that weekend in the Miss Brillo, and she'd run in the Talma up. Mark Cassie had been training her before she was purchased and sent to us, and they had left her up there to run her in the Talma, and they caught some real soft ground, and she didn't really take it well that day. So same thing happened. We were entered here at home in the Miss Grillo, and we kind of had to call an audible and scratch and enter in the Jessamine at Keeneland. And you know, even though it was, I think it was 15 days out from the Breeders' Cup at that time, and that year, and you know, that was our only move because we didn't want to waste the shot of trying to get there, and that was a winning year in race. So it worked out. She went there and, you know, put on a show that day. That was an impressive race and adjustment that day, and got us really excited and hoping she was going to come back well that day and the next few days and get us to the Breeders' Cup. We didn't really have much time, 2 weeks, and she put on a heck of a run in the Breeders' Cup. Just, you know, maybe that 2 weeks got to her a little bit. They just ran her down that last inside the 16th pole, that last little bit. I think we were beat maybe a little over a length, maybe a short length for the whole thing. And she put on a that gave us a thrill that day because we almost were able to pull it off. Our first Breeders' Cup win would have been. And anyways, we knew we had a nice filly on our hands. So came back to New York with her, and she trained so well, you know, out of it that kind of started looking around and said, hey, you know, maybe this filly should, we should bring her right back out there for the Hollywood Starlet. And, you know, IEH had owned her, and I think they were off in Hong Kong at the time, Mike and Nick and those guys. And I said, I think they had, oh, I can't remember who they were running over there that year. But anyways, I said, just make sure you leave enough money here so we got it supplemented and everything, because I think she's doing really well. We're going to fly her out there. I'm going to take care of her and do all this. And sure enough, she went out there, did great, and put on a big effort that day. And that was our first grade one win. And it was neat too, because Baffert had two in the race as well, and he finished second and third. And he was about the first one in the winner's circle down there to congratulate us on that one when we were coming down the stairs there in Hollywood. So, but another great moment, you know, that's the kind of moments we're all looking for. And, you know, another one that a day I'll never forget.
Yeah, how cool was that for you to have Bob Baffert come up and be the first one to congratulate you?
Yeah, no, it was great, because he's been a huge supporter of us over the years. And, you know, Bob and I and Tanya had a great relationship over the years. We look after, you know, his horses when he sends them east, and he's done, you know, likewise for us. You know, the few times we've had to do that going out west, and it's, you know, it's worked out really good. We've learned a lot from Bob over the years, and still continue to. And, you know, I think it just made it real special. And you know, the whole day was just couldn't have been better. And now, seeing as how Hollywood Park is gone forever, that's a special memory, having our first grade one win come all the way out there. And going back to the place where I started first out on my own, and Tanya's from and everything, that really added to it as well. So great memory.
Was that tough for you to see Hollywood Park go?
I think so, yeah. You know, I mean, not that I spent a lot of time out there, but, you know, we had, going back to this race and some other special moments out there, and, you know, got a lot of great memories of it and just the history and everything. It's certainly sad to see, no doubt.
I know you've won big races all over the country, obviously out in California and in New York, but when you look at your resume and some of the bigger races that you've won, not only your first winner coming at Keeneland, but people will wonder why you would race anywhere else but Lexington, Kentucky, because not only did you have Lara win the Jesmond on her way to the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies Turf and that third-place performance, you had Negligee win the Alcibiades in 2009, and then you had Lilacs and Lace in 2011, who took the Ashland at odds of 48-1, and I'm sure you knew you had that one in the bag all along.
Well, those, yeah, another two days that were really special. You know, going back to Negligee, that was our first grade one win, and Sovereign Stables' first grade one win, which was, I mean, that was amazing. We've been together so long, and the Gatsas family and everything, that just was unreal. You know, another real nice filly that we had, and got us to the Breeders, back to the Breeders' Cup as well that year. And That was a big race for us. And, you know, Keeneland, yeah, she's going back to Keeneland, where I won my first race and everything with those guys. And it, you know, made it for a great day. And then Lilac and Lace, she was, that was another story. you know, she had come out of Golden Gate that year, and we brought her down to Palmetto. She just needed a little bit of time to recover after being purchased from the traveling and all that. And, you know, so she hadn't been out in a while, and we ran her at Turfway a couple weeks prior in the Bourbonette. She was fourth, and she ran a good race. It was just, you know, I knew as soon as I unsaddled her, I knew we were going to probably enter her back. I mean, she just looked like she just needed the race, and she got trapped down inside. And I knew she was a much better filly than this, and she had trained really better, really strong going into it, and probably just needed to get out there and run one. She hadn't run since, I think, New Year's Day, and this is now the end of March, so a quick turnaround, and she ended up in the Ashland at 48-1. They kind of just, you know, dismissed her, and not much speed in the race, and told Javier, get aggressive with her. I think we can, you know, might be able to take this thing, you know, as far as we can go. Let's see what she's got. And she's really doing really well, thriving these last 2 weeks since she ran, had that out in the Bourbonette. And sure enough, I mean, yeah, I mean, 48-1, we didn't, thin thing for sure, but we knew he had a shot to run well. The filly was training that well, and she just, you know, ran beyond her expectations that day. And, you know, you never think a grade one's easy for sure, no doubt, but she made it look easy that day. That was sure fun for another great owner. We had Jimmy Cavello. He's been fantastic supporter the last several years, and had a lot of fun with Jimmy, won a bunch of races, and, you know, he's a great guy, loves the game, and, you know, another guy we love to win for.
Yeah, and as they say, horses don't know that they're 48-1 or 50-1 or whatever it is, and Lilacs and Lace certainly performed well that day.
That was a big day, too. We had four entries that day. We won three. That was the second day of Keenan. We almost won the fourth that day. We almost went 4-for-4. Screenplay actually got beat. He was second in the last race that day, and came back 2 weeks later and did win at that same meet. So that was a heck of a meet. We won a bunch of that meet. That was fun. And, you know, doing it all, too. Don't have a big stable. Like I say, like right now, I've got about 30 right now in training, but, I mean, we've never been – had numbers greater than 50. That would be the max that we've ever probably had in training at one point, and that would have been for a very short time. So, you know, but it's nice to be able to have some of that quality in the barn, you know, even though we don't have the vast numbers of horses, you know, so it's hard to keep it up consistently, but certainly can appreciate those special days like that.
John, only about 2 minutes left. This has really flown by, but I do want to ask you quickly about, and this probably won't do it justice, but your first Derby experience in 2013 with Falling Sky.
Well, I thought the experience was great. I mean, you know, we knew going in there we were up against it. You know, we had a feeling all along he's going to be a one-turn horse, and didn't really think, you know, we saw in the preps leading into it that the distance was probably getting to him. He was doing really well. he got us there, got the owners there, and it was more so for them. Because they want, you know, to have the experience of running in the Derby and getting there. So, you know, going in, we gave it our best shot. The horse was training very well, did everything right, leading us there. And, you know, going in, we didn't have, you know, the greatest of expectations. We were just hoping for the best and, you know, maybe run a big one, get, you know, lose on the lead or something like that. Unfortunately, that all didn't happen. And, you know, with the track conditions and everything else that went on that day. But, you know, leading up to the whole experience and just seeing how much fun our owners were having during it was worth it. So, you know, that was it. But, you know, I won't see me there again unless I have a big shot of winning it.
Well, hopefully we will see you there, John, and see you again very, very shortly in the Kentucky Derby. It would be great to see. You're a class act. You represent the game so well, and can't thank you enough for spending a little time here on Trainer Talk with me tonight.
Oh, Mike, anytime. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much. Continued success.
Thank you.
Trainer John Terranova here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton, somebody who has started from the ground up, left Boston College to become a horse trainer. How cool is that? Started with 3, 4, 5 horses and now making his way to the Breeders' Cup, making his way to the Kentucky Derby. We will hope to see him again in the Run for the Roses very soon. Another half a Trainer Talk ahead. Stay tuned for that here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Trainer Talk on HRRN Live, presented by Fasig Tipton.
Where will you be this summer? The Fasig Tipton 2014 yearling sales will be here before we know it, so make plans now. The July sale in Lexington, Kentucky will be held July 14th. In 2013, the sale boasted an average of more than $89,000 and a median of $72,000, and the percentage rate of return of 43% was the third highest of any yearling sale in North America. The Saratoga sale on August 4th and 5th is always one of the top international yearling marketplaces. The sales $295,000 average in 2013, maintains its leadership role, and with the highest percentage of profitable yearlings among all sales in North America this past year, it's the only place to be this August. New York bred yearlings are in the spotlight August 9th and 10th in Saratoga, with a $430,000 average and major increases in both average and median in 2013. The New York bred sale is the most productive auction for the cream of the New York bred crop. So where will you be this summer?
This is Daily Racing Form's Dan Ullman with some big news about DRF bets. Thousands of players like you have already made the switch to DRF bets, and now there's an even bigger reason for you to join. Free DRF PPs. That's right. For the first time ever, get free Daily Racing Form PPs when you wager with DRF bets. These are the DRF past performances you know and love, and DRF bets is the only place you can get them free. So why wager anywhere else? With DRF bets, you'll get the best sign-up bonus in the business, free guides and analysis from DRF's top handicappers, breaking news, analysis, and wagering on the go with DRF and DRF Bets Mobile, one-click multi-ticket wagers with DRF Ticketmaker, and now free Daily Racing Form PPs. Only one place gives you the PPs you prefer when you wager, DRF Bets. Join today and wager with the most trusted name in racing. And if you sign up right now, you'll get a $125 cash bonus. Find out more at drf.com/bets. That's drf.com/bets.
HRRN Live brings you live racing from tracks across the country. Join Chad Summers and the HRRN broadcast team as we bring you live racing every Wednesday through Friday, 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern on our new channel, XM208, or streaming live online at horseracingradio.net. HRRN Live is your source for live thoroughbred racing from coast to coast, only on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Go to hrrnlive.com for a complete schedule of tracks and races.
This is Bob Baffert, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Mike Penna back with you on Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. A special welcome back to everybody tuning in coast to coast across North America on Sirius 93, XM 208, and everybody listening worldwide at horseracingradio.net. Don't forget, you can go back and listen to all of our Trainer Talk shows podcast archived on our website, horseracingradio.net, and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. Looking forward to the next half hour of the show. Going to be joined by trainer Bill Gowan. An interesting story here. 80 career winners. They have banked more than $1.2 million in purses, including the talented three-year-old Rydon Curlin, pointing for that date at Churchill Downs on the first Saturday in May. And Bill Gowan, nice enough to be with me here in the second half of the program. Bill, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Yeah, happy to have you with me. And by the way, it's actually Bronco Bill Gowan, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Well, some people. Actually, the starter at Churchill Downs named me that a long time ago. Nobody's ever called me that before or since, but it just kind of stuck at least once.
I think I had read that somewhere as I was getting ready for the interview. I said, Bronco Bill, that's kind of cool. Where'd the nickname come from? Do you know where it came from?
Yeah, I was working a horse out of the gates one morning at Churchill, and he started bucking, and the starter at the time, Tommy Wagner, started calling me Bronco Billy, and just kind of snowballed from there. So that's how that got started.
So does this mean you're cheering for the Broncos in the Super Bowl, or does it not have any relation?
Well, it doesn't have any relation, but I'm dang sure pulling for them.
Well, Bill Gowan, my special guest here. Bill, let's start. We talked about, or I mentioned, Rydon Curlin. This is a horse that you have on the Derby trail right now. I know it's a big deal for you because you don't get this opportunity very often. It's not like you're training, you know, 1,000 horses and you winning, you know, tons of races every year. So this is a big deal for you.
Well, yeah, you know, I bought one horse at the yearling sale that year, and it turned out to be Rydon Curlin. So, you know, the odds that are happening are pretty long, but we got lucky and got us a good one, looks like.
Yeah, and for people that aren't familiar with the story, Rydon Kirlin broke his maiden by 7 3/4 lengths at Ellis Park last July as a two-year-old. He set a new track record that day. You mentioned purchasing him as a yearling. He was a $25,000 yearling purchase, and the minute he crossed the finish line, you started getting offers all the way up to seven figures. Is that right?
That's true. Actually, we started getting offers after his first race. He broke dead last at Churchill, circled the field, and came flying and ran second. But the phone started ringing then, and then after he set the track record, they really got serious. But we had two really legitimate offers, but my owner decided that he wanted to keep him in racing. So that's where we are now.
Well, you go from a $25,000 yearling purchase to a seven-figure offer. We know this game can change on a dime, Bill. Why not take the money?
Well, if I'd owned him, he would have already been gone. But, you know, it wasn't my final decision, and I respect the owner's decision. He wants to play the game, and that's why we're in the game, is to race horses. And so he wanted to stay in, see how long or how far the horse would take him. So that's what we're going to do.
Well, it took you to the Grade 1 Champagne this past year at Belmont Park. Ended up finishing third behind Havana and Honor Code. No shame there. And that was the very first Grade 1 stakes race you've ever been part of, right?
That's correct. I've run in some Grade 2s and 3s, but definitely the first Grade 1 I'd ever run in.
Was it a different experience?
Oh, it was a good experience. I'd been to Belmont, but it's been a long time, and we shipped up there with a nice horse, and he put in a great effort, so it was a really good experience. Plus, we picked up $50,000 in the process.
Yeah, that doesn't hurt. That certainly helps, especially when you end up finishing third behind horses like Havana and Honor Code. That had to make you feel pretty good that you were in that discussion and in that company.
Right, and we always knew he had a good horse, but he, he kind of put us on the national map that day with the anytime you can run third in a Grade 1, especially at a place like Belmont, you're definitely going to get some attention. And if he can run with that kind of company, you know he's a pretty good horse. So I'm pretty excited about it.
Well, and I had read somewhere that you were surrounded by some pretty esteemed company watching that race as well.
At Belmont?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, all the top trainers, Hall of Fame trainers, and all of them were in there. Billy Mott, the Shug, the Zito. So it was great to compete against those guys. I got a lot of respect for all of those guys. Matter of fact, I galloped horses for Billy Mott one year, so I know him fairly well. And like I said, I like competing against those kind of guys. You know, you're competing with the best.
Well, you've obviously done several different things in the business to get to this point. So take us back to the beginning, Bill. How did Bill Gowan grow up as a racing fan, and what first got you hooked on the sport?
Well, I guess it was my dad that first got me hooked on the sport. He had bought a few race horses just racing around Louisiana, and we always grew up around animals. My dad had a vet clinic, so we were always around horses and cows and dogs and cats or whatever. So but my dad started buying a few race horses, how I got interested in it. And then I went to college at Louisiana Tech. They had an equine program over there. And went through the program and graduated in 1988 from Louisiana Tech. And the next day I drove to California and went to work for Jack Vanberg. Figured I better try to learn something. So he'd had a pretty good track record putting out some good trainers. So I decided to go to work for Jack. And I wound up staying with him for 4 years.
Well, you couldn't have picked a better teacher. What was it like working for Jack Vanberg?
It was a lot of work, but it was a lot of fun, too. Jack, he worked you hard every day, and then we'd go have fun at night. So Jack was just great to be around. And Jack likes to teach. If you don't learn something from Jack, you're either sleepwalking through your job or not paying attention, because he's going to make you learn.
Yeah, what kind of teacher was he?
Was
he a tough teacher? Did he really put a lot of pressure on you to learn the game and to do things the right way?
Definitely. He wanted you to do things right. He was going to make you do things the right way, or you were going to be gone. That's just the way he was, One time he told me he was a perfectionist, and I believe him. He didn't want anything out of order. Everything had to be right.
Well, you know, it's funny because we hear that about coaches.
Really good teachers along the way besides Jack. I worked for, like I said, I galloped horse for Billy Mott for a while, and I worked for David Vance. Was galloping horse for him, learned a lot from Dave, and worked for Randy Morris and learned a lot from him. So, you know, just along the way, a lot of people helped me out, and those guys, I learned a lot from those guys, just working for them and paying attention to how they do things. They all won races, and they've always been pretty successful, all of them.
You know, it's interesting because I hear a lot of trainers, Bill, they'll talk about working for different people along the way, and it seems like they take little bits and pieces from everybody to
That's
make
exactly
them the trainer
right.
that they
That's
are now.
That's kind of what I did. I took, you know, watched what everything that they all of them did, and you take a little bit from everyone and just kind of apply it to your own program.
So what was the biggest thing you learned from Jack Van Berg?
Main thing is checking horses' legs every day. That was Jack's biggest deal. He had 60 horses in the barn. We checked 60 legs every day, 7 days a week. And you check their legs, and then you would train accordingly. If they had heat, pressure, whatever, you'd back off of them a little bit. That's the main thing I learned from Jack was I learned leg work from Jack, and I think he's probably the best that I've ever seen come down the pike.
What's your favorite Jack Van Berg story?
I don't know if I can tell it on the air. But Jack and I, Jack worked me like a dog, but we had a lot of fun in the process. I don't know. I've got a lot of good stories about Jack. Jack took me under his wing, you know, and he treated me like his own kid. I got nothing but respect for Jack. And matter of fact, he and I are in the same barn in Hot Springs this year, so it's gonna be fun.
It's just like old times. You know, he recently came out with his autobiography called From Grit to Glory. Have you read it?
I have read it. Yep, I read it and really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Well written. Chris Katulak did a good job writing the book. And I've always said they needed to write a book about Jack because they broke the mold when they made him.
Yeah, how fitting is that title?
Well, you couldn't make it any fitting. He's like John Wayne of horse racing.
So I assume you're trying to emulate some of the things that you learned from him, some of the things you learned from Bill Mott and from Randy Morrison, from David Vance, and kind of mold those all into what you do today, and that must be a huge help for you.
Oh, it's definitely a huge help. And like I said, all those guys have won races and are still winning races. And it's just like our incorporated, mostly Jack's program is kind of what I go on. But like I said, I learned a lot from all those other guys, and they all have great qualities of their training program, too, that I try to incorporate. Just watching them, what they do every day with their horses, you know, maybe after they claim one, see what they do with them or how they train a stakes horse, you know. Every horse is different, just like a human, you know. You got to treat them all different.
So you said you graduated from Louisiana Tech in 88. Of course, Jack won the Breeders' Cup Classic in 88 with Ali Sheba. Were you there for that, or did you come right afterwards?
I had gone to California in November, and Ali Sheba was back at Churchill. So I was never around Ali Sheba. I came to work for him right pretty much when he retired.
How about Bill Mott? What's the biggest thing you learned in galloping horses and being around Bill Mott?
Bill Mott is probably the most patient trainer I've ever seen in my life. And probably one of the most thorough trainers. He goes over a horse from head to toe every day, which that really impressed me. And just watching him be patient with horses, if they're not ready to go on, he never would go on with them. He'd stop and back off of them. And I learned to do that also. And down the road, you'll have a better horse, and they'll usually last longer if you do that. So that's what impressed me most about Billy Mott is just the way he approached training every day. He was probably the most thorough person I've ever seen go over a horse, day in and day out.
What about Randy Morris and David Vance?
Those guys, I just learned a lot just watching them like claim horses. Both of those guys are great claiming trainers, and they've had their share of stakes winners too. But just watching them claim horses and see what they would do with them. Sometimes you would. I saw David Vance jog a filly for a month one time, and later over and she wins. So you know, just. And they both taught me to, you just got to watch your horse, see what your horse is telling you. One thing I learned from Randy Morris is you don't always have to train them real hard. If you back off them a little bit, a lot of times they'll run a whole lot better for you. So it's just, you know, mainly just watching those guys and seeing how they approach training. And like I said, they've all been successful, and I picked up a lot of tips from all of them.
Talking with trainer Bill Gowan on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So, Bill, if you could describe your approach to training horses, how would you describe it?
Well, I pretty much train them how their legs look and how the horse is doing. You know, if the horse is, I just watch my horse every day and let my horse tell me what he's doing, how he's feeling, you know, what he needs, if he's eating, if he's real aggressive, and he's, you know, I'll train on with him. The main thing is just watch your horse. That's what I tell everybody. Checking your legs every day and watching your horse and see what he's telling you. Watch his weight, see how he's carrying his weight, see if he's eating everything, how his eye, you know, how if he has a good look in his eye or whatever. That's kind of that's the way I approach it.
So every horse is different.
Every horse is different, but a fast one's a lot easier to train, let me tell you.
Makes life a little bit easier, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, it's not as much pressure trying to train one of those slow ones when you're trying to meet payroll. That's pressure there. Having a fast one's fun.
Did you always want to be a horse trainer?
Well, I guess it's all I've ever done. So I've never really the only job I've ever had in my life is being on the racetrack. So yeah, I've always ever since my dad kind of got me involved with the thoroughbred, that's not really all I've ever wanted to do.
You know, I mentioned that you don't have the big super stables, you know, the size of a Todd Pletcher or even a Bill Mott or Bob Baffert or somebody like that. Is it a different approach when you're training a select number of horses each year?
Well, I don't think so. I think you have to you have to train accordingly and go on. And, you know, if your horse is telling you to back off, then you have to back off. But I don't think it's any different than training a small stable than a large one. They just have more numbers to work with. And, in a large stable, if one gets hurt, you got 10 more out there. If mine gets hurt, you know, then I'm kind of on the back burner. So that's the only thing. But there's really nothing you can do about it. You still have to train just like you would in a large stable. You know, you have to get them fit. You got to train on them. You have to work them. And hopefully they'll stay together long enough to win some races.
What do you remember about the day you won your first race? When did that happen?
Well, it was really exciting. Matter of fact, the jockey that I used was Terry Thompson, and he had worked for Fanberg also. Jack got him started, and Terry had the bug at the time, and he won my first race for me. So that was pretty exciting. And matter of fact, the very first horse that I trained, I claimed him for $12,500, and we made about $80,000 with him, and owner thought I was a genius. But
were you thinking it was an easy game?
I did go with the first horse I claimed, and that kind of got me rolling, and then just been doing it ever since.
Were you thinking it was an easy game at that point, Bill?
What's that?
I said, were you thinking it was going to be an easy game at that point?
No, I never knew it was going to be an easy game. I knew it was. We just got lucky and picked out a decent horse that was sound, and he made us look good.
What would you consider to be your best training job?
My best training job?
Yeah.
Well, I had a horse called Star Spangled Gator that had a lot of talent, but he didn't have a mind at all. He was just a real nervous type horse, and we wound up winning a stake with him, made about $230,000 with him. He was a tough horse to train just because of his mental status. He had to, he could lose at any time. But we won six races with the horse, and he was sound the whole time, so I thought that was a pretty good training job.
You know, you had a couple of years just looking at some of the starters. If you go to Equibase, you can pull up all the starters that you've had year by year. And mm-hmm. Typically, you know, in the 30s and upper 20s and 40s a couple of years, but you had a couple there in 1999 and 2000 with only six starters. What happened those years?
Well, I didn't really have many horses, and that's about the time I was galloping for Randy Morris. I was down on horses, so he gave me a job galloping, and I would keep one or two of my own So I was kind of doing that, and that's about the time my kids were born, so I was just kind of laying low, and then things started picking up a little bit. Said I've never had a real big stable and never really had a desire to have 30 or 40 head. I just enjoy being with the horses. Yeah, that's why I got in the game, because I love the horses, and that's how that came about. But during that time, I was working for Randy and Polly Galvin, one of the best horses he ever had, a horse called Morluck. So.
Talking with trainer Bill Gowan on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Bill, you mentioned your kids. How many kids do you have?
What's that?
How many children do you have?
I have two girls.
Any
They're
ambition to be
13 now?
Yeah. Any ambition to be a horse trainer at all?
The girls?
Yeah.
I don't see them having any ambition, and I'm not trying to encourage it.
They're
doing fine. One's in the volleyball, the other's gymnastics, so that's fine with me.
Yeah, there you go. What if they come to you one day and say, "Hey, Dad, I want to follow in your footsteps"? What do you tell them?
Well, I would give them every opportunity and try to show them, you know, everything about it. But I would tell them that it is a tough life, and it's, you know, like right now I'm in Hot Springs and I'm away from my family, and it's hard. But you know, you have to be with your horse also. So it's, but if they wanted to be a horse trainer, I would try to help them everywhere I could.
Hey, you know, it's interesting you mention it being difficult to be away from the family. We hear that from so many trainers because, let's face it, this is 365 days a year, 7 days a week, and this is what it's all about. And Christmas, Thanksgiving, whatever it might be, you're at the barn with your horses. Talk about the sacrifices you have to make as a horse trainer to be successful.
Well, you have to be there. I mean, that's the bottom line. I mean, unless you have really good help. I've got really good help right now in Hot Springs. And actually, I'm here in Louisville with my family here. I'll be going back this weekend. And but I've got a girl named Bridget Lambert down there that's working for me. She worked with Von Hemel for 20-something years, and she's really good with the horses. And I mean, that makes me feel better when I come home knowing that someone is definitely looking after them. But it's a sacrifice. You have to be there 7 days a week. The horses can't take care of themselves, so it's a sacrifice, and the family has a sacrifice too, but they understand it. My wife, she grew up around the racetrack. Her parents have the feed business at Churchill Downs, Schulteis Feed. So she understands the business, not to say that it's not hard, but she understands it, you know, helps every way she can.
That's important. That support system is ultra important to so many trainers. I've heard that from several people that have appeared on this show. You galloped horses, obviously, for David Vance and for Randy Morse, I'm sorry, and for Bill Mott. Did you ever have any aspirations to be a rider before you got into training?
No, I was always too big for that. I knew, you know, when I graduated from high school, I weighed 100 pounds, and I thought, you know, maybe, but that didn't last very long. first 2 months of college, I put on 30 pounds, so there went my jockey aspirations.
Yeah, it happens to a lot of us.
Exactly. But no, I never really thought about that. Main thing is, you know, I just always wanted to train horses, be around the horses. And, you know, we grew up around horses and riding horses. That's all we ever did. So that's all we were ever around. Like I said, my dad was a veterinarian, and we were around animals our whole life. So that's kind of how I got in with the training aspect of it, just being around animals, loving the animals, and loving horses.
You know, every trainer seems to credit their owners for helping make them successful. Talk about some of the relationships you've had with some owners that have really helped you get to this point.
Well, like this owner I have right now, Dan Doherty, he's been with me for 5 or 6 years, and he's been a really good owner. We've had quite a few horses together, nothing like Ride on Curlin, but we've had some horses that could run a little bit and had some success. We've won some races. A guy that first started me out, Gary Short, was a good owner. I trained for him for a long time. And, you know, any of those guys that will send you a horse and give you an opportunity and you know, trust something that valuable to put that in your care, then, you know, they're good to have. They're hard to find as a good owner also. Really hard to find.
Well, you know, it's a long way between now and the first Saturday in May, but you have a horse like Ride On Curlin who has shown you so much promise, so much ability. He comes back and he wins his three-year-old debut, and now you're going to point toward the stakes races at Oaklawn Park with him. Just do you allow yourself, Bill, to dream about what that might be like if he makes it to the starting gate beneath the Twin Spires?
Well, I mean, that's what I've been dreaming about this since I first took out a trainer's license. That's the first thing. I'm going to win the Kentucky Derby. I didn't realize how hard it was to even get there. So to even get there would be phenomenal. And then to win it would be unbelievable. But, you know, I think that's everyone's goal is to get a horse to the Derby and hopefully win it. I think that's why most trainers are in the game. Try to run in the big race, the Derby, the Breeders' Cups, the upper echelon of racing.
When you have a horse like this, do you kind of feel like, hey, we're in the discussion now, we've faced some of the big boys, we've competed with the big boys, we know we belong, do you kind of get the feeling that this is your shot, and does that put even more pressure on you with this one horse?
Well, not really. I don't really feel pressure. I just tell my wife, I think this is more fun than it is pressure. You got one shot. I got one shot with one horse. If he doesn't make it, hey, I'm, you know, kind of back to where I was. But I'm going to enjoy the ride as long as I can. And hopefully it'll take us a long way for a few years.
Yeah, you have nothing to lose.
Well, I mean, you know, if you lost the horse, it sure would be something to lose. But
right.
It's, you know, like I said, it's not a lot of pressure training a horse like that. It's more fun than it is anything. Pressure is when you got a bunch of climbers in the barn and you got to win to make payroll. That's pressure.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. Ride On Curlin, not a claimer. He is pointing toward the races at Oaklawn Park to get ready for the Kentucky Derby. And Bill, want to wish you all the best with that along that road to Louisville and really hope to see you there on the first Saturday in May.
Good. We hope to be there. Hope to see you there too.
All right, I'll end this by asking you, as I do all of our trainers, what other things outside of horse racing does Bill Gowan enjoy?
Oh, I like listening to good music.
What kind?
Well, I usually have it on the Outlaw channel on Sirius XM. So, you know, mostly country rock, southern rock, things like that.
Who's your favorite?
My favorite of all time, I got to go with my man, Willie Nelson.
What's the best concert you've ever seen in person?
Probably the best concert I ever saw was Bruce Springsteen at LSU in 1984. One of the best concerts I ever saw in my life.
Yeah, it's hard to
but
argue
Willie's
with that.
But Willie's still my favorite.
Favorite Willie Nelson song?
Oh, probably Angel Flying Too Close to the Ground.
Well, there you go. And hopefully you'll be flying high over the next couple of weeks, my friend.
I hope so.
All right, Bill Gowan, my special guest on Trainer Talk. Bill, can't thank you enough for taking the time. Always a pleasure to hear the stories, and your story is outstanding. And all the best along that road to Louisville and the first Saturday in May.
Great talking to you.
All right, thanks so much. Bill Gowan here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. What a story. Here's a guy that doesn't start very many horses. Doesn't win very many races. He wins on average probably 5 races a year, maybe 6 in a good year. And here he is with an opportunity. This is a game, we say it all the time, this is a game built on dreams. And Bill Gowan living the dream with a horse like Ride On Curlin now. We'll see if that dream continues over the coming weeks as we make our way to the first Saturday in May. But what a great story. Can't help but cheer for a person like that. This is your shot. This is your opportunity. Make the most of it. And he sounds like he's really enjoying it. Says the pressure isn't much right now. Just wait. Win a couple of those stakes races down at Oaklawn Park. That pressure will mount. But it sounds like he has the right attitude, the right mentality. And want to wish Bill Gowan all the best as he makes his way through the Derby trail. Been a lot of fun here this afternoon. Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Don't forget to visit FasigTipton.com to learn more about the upcoming schedule of sales and deadlines to nominate your horses to those sales. Make sure you do that at FasigTipton.com. A podcast of this show going to be available on our website, HorseRacingRadio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. And don't forget to check out our full 2014 schedule at HorseRacingRadio.net. We're back tomorrow here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Make sure you tune us in. For my producer, Lee Delapina, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton.